I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. The Heat, an international improv comedy showcase, returns to Granville Island's Improv Center this week, starting Tuesday, the 27th of January to the 31st of January. Five improvisation groups from here and around the world exhibit their talents. There's Michelle Impro and Teresa and Full Show from Great Britain, Second Breakfast from New Zealand, Dumb John from Chicago, and a team from the Improv Center here. It's the third year, and it's always fun to get a preview of what to expect during this week. Joining me now is Alan Pavlikovic, the artistic director of the Improv Center, a job he's had since September. I'll ask Alan about the Heat and these companies that come from elsewhere, and what it's like for an improv artist from here to learn from these talents. I'll also ask Alan about making improv accessible, not just for artists, but audiences. That's what the Improv Center through the Heat has done, making improv something worth making a night of. Visit theimprovcenter.ca for tickets and information. We taped this interview last Wednesday. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Alan Pavlikovic. Mr. Pavlikovic, good morning.
Hi, how are you doing?
Pretty good yourself.
I'm doing very, very well. Very excited for this month.
So, yeah, so the Heat is on at the end of the month at the Improv Center, the 27th to the 31st. You've got, is it four teams from around the world coming to town? Is that right?
That's right. We've actually got four teams from three different countries this year. So we do have some from the UK, a team from Chicago, the US, as well as we're inviting back Second Breakfast, which is from New Zealand.
So the response to the Heat in previous years, at least the two previous years, I mean, that's been quite good, hasn't it?
It's been really incredible. We've kind of found this wonderful sweet spot of being able to show Vancouver some really world-class improv by kind of importing these artists from all over the world. And what's really cool is we've seen a lot of community engagement. So when Spit Manila came the last couple of years, there was a great outpouring of support from our local Filipino community. So we're hoping to see some beautiful connections like that this year as well.
And that's something that you're aware of, aren't you, as the artistic director of the Improv Center, in terms of building the audience that goes there to Granville Island. You want to make improv accessible. I guess that's one of the goals of the job, isn't it?
It definitely is. And it's one of those things that anybody can do improv and anybody can enjoy improv. It's not like an opera or a Shakespeare where you've got to understand the language. We do things made up on the spot. And we're getting suggestions from the audience. So it is a really interactive style of theater.
That's the thing that I think more people should consider. I mean, in terms of, say, making improv a night out, either for a date or for a group of friends.
Oh, totally. Well, it is one of those things, too, where, again, certain other traditional forms of theater, you know, you sit down in your seat, the lights go out, and you don't make a peep except for a little bit of applause here and there.
Yeah.
But in improv, we're actively asking for information from you. So you kind of get to be more involved than any other way. And so, again, whether you go by yourself, whether you're bringing your partner, your best friend, or your whole family, you know, we've seen, you know, families that have 12-year-old kids and the parents and the grandparents are all at the same table and they're all laughing their heads off.
You know what's fascinating, Ellen, about improv as I've viewed it from afar over the last few years is that I guess popular culture, the zeitgeist, it makes its way to improv. You know, you're well aware of, say, The Bachelor and its impact in popular culture and shows of its ilk. You know, they become fodder for improv, don't they? And that's a marvelous way to let audiences in. Sitcoms, another form that when you bring it to the improv stage, it makes the whole idea of improv accessible for a larger audience, doesn't it?
Oh, 100%. We actually have done a series of different kind of comedy pieces in our regular programming. So we've seen, you know, slasher films. We've seen things like Traitors, or we even did a format that was based off of The Bachelor, and we did an entire season of the show in the hour and a half of our performance. So we do take a lot from popular culture. We do take a lot of what people are thinking and feeling of the time and incorporate that into our show. So The Heat might not have as much of that kind of parody culture, mm-hmm. but if we ask you what your favorite thing is right now, if that happens to be a book, a TV show, a press junket that's getting a lot of attention, you know, on TV, on the internet, that is bound to work its way into what we produce on stage.
And laughter, isn't it? You've got teams from three different countries. Laughter and what we laugh at, I mean, that's universal most of the time, isn't it?
I think so as well. Again, what's beautiful about improv is as much as we do have at the Improv Center a really beautiful stage that has, you know, some extra, you know, doors and windows for us to play around with, uh-huh. even though that we do have certain props and certain costume pieces in the backstage, it's not necessary. So what I do also find is a lot of improvisers do lean on physicality, mm-hmm. not even just physical comedy, but just using their bodies to also help tell a story. When you see someone rolling out a piece of imaginary dough, if they're putting the right tension into it, if they're doing the various steps that you would do naturally in real life, it really starts to register for everyone watching and, you know, your scene partners on stage, even though we can all agree there's no dough on stage. It's all made up, but we can really transmit that idea and that image, even just using our bodies.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing about it. It's the mind spending itself or taking itself to where it needs to go, both as a performer and as an audience. But it's that physicality, especially of the performer, that adds so much to the experience, doesn't it?
Definitely.
What have you found? Pardon me for interrupting, but what have you found, Alan, in terms of how to prepare oneself for it to be like if you have to work tonight on stage? Let's say there's a performance of The Heat, and you're involved as a performer. What do you have to do the day of to say prepare yourself for the evening's work that you have to do?
So maybe a little different than like a professional athlete. I don't think I know any improvisers that have like a set of superstitions or you know yeah. necessary things they have to do. But I would definitely say. What's great about improv is regardless of if you have a good or bad day, when you do get to the theater, you know, we have our check-in, we connect with who's cast that evening. But improv is a really wonderful kind of clearing of the mind because we make things up on the spot. Again, what happened in your day-to-day life kind of dissolves. You really live that suspended disbelief when you get on stage. So aside from making sure that I am well hydrated and well fed, because I do know I'm a very physical, very energetic player, so I do need to make sure that I don't get lightheaded or anything like that. Don't want to detract from the show.
mm-hmm. But I've heard from other performers that when one eats, that's also critical too. I mean, you're not going to have a big bowl of pasta, say, an hour before, right?
Oh, totally, yeah. Totally. Again, we're maybe not talking about like extreme athleticism where you know they're timing out and weighing out proteins and calories. But yes, definitely having a good meal before your show, not too close to the show. Again, you don't want burping and hiccups while you're trying to perform, detracting. We always also like make sure that there's an intermission in all of our shows. That's something that's great for the audience and great for us to take that 15 minutes. So oftentimes we go back into the green room and we grab that extra glass of water, and take a deep breath before we get back on stage, and kind of do the wacky, crazy make-em-ups.
What have you found, Alan, from learning from, say, these groups from other countries? I mean, you know, their references may be a little bit different. Their concerns may be a little bit different, but at the end of the day, I'm sure there's something that you've yielded in terms of, say, how to be a better person at improv. Have you?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I think improv is also one of the really few things in the world where you essentially succeed through failures. And being able to accept those failures, being able to accept those mistakes and move on to the next step, to the next chapter, the next plot point. And that is something I've found is really quite cool and universal, that every team that does improv realizes we're getting something on the spot, we're making it up in an instant, so if it doesn't work 100%, we're okay with that. We make a little failure, we move on to the next thing and just try and make it better and better and better. So this kind of wonderful hopefulness and not being stopped by little pitfalls is something that's really true for essentially every improv troupe I've ever interacted with.
You know, I can't help but think that that's useful in whatever work one does outside of improv.
Oh, totally. I'm also a trained chef, and I've held many different hats before being the artistic director.
Yeah.
So that is one of those things where, like, there are certain, you know, recipes that are really, really difficult. And I think if I didn't have my improv training, if I had made mistakes in the kitchen, it would have really kind of broken me. It would have really made me lean into those negative emotions. But knowing that you can have a failure and then the next day have a success very easily means that your day-to-day work life, your other jobs that you do, you have a little bit more grace for yourself.
Yeah, and we all need that, don't we?
Well, exactly. I think, and again, a lot of us are our own worst critics and stuff like that. So it's nice to be able to give yourself a note, but to be able to take that and push it forward instead of dwelling, instead of stopping.
So I read this interview that you gave Mike Usinger at the Georgia Strait, that fridge questionnaire that people in this town do, to lean into your training as a chef. You mentioned the smoked butter, and you said that it's cold smoked. How does cold smoke work?
Oh, yeah. So essentially you've got warm smoking and cold smoking. So if there is a heat source underneath your food, then it is going to slowly kind of cure and cook it. So I've got a little contraption that pipes the smoke from a little hopper into a separate container. And so that way you can do things like raw meats, cheeses, butters, all that kind of stuff. And then you can actually put that in the fridge. So the smoke still permeates through the food product, but you're not adding any heat, so it doesn't change the texture or flavor through that process.
And as you described, the smoke butter is pretty good, isn't it?
It's really incredible. And for that matter, in kind of sweet and savory applications. You know, I've had it straight on, a piece of toast in the morning, and you get that subtle smokiness. But if you mix it with a little bit of brown sugar and, melt that with some apples or peaches, it becomes an incredible dessert topping or like a great filling for a cobbler or something.
I'll bet, yeah. In that same interview, you mentioned going to a Biff Naked concert and how life-changing it was. I had her on the show recently, and I so enjoyed talking to her. She has such a marvelous spirit and a way about her and the way she looks at life. I found just fascinating. But you are obviously a fan of her music, aren't you? And have been for a long time. Is that right?
Yeah, I've probably been listening to Biff Naked for as long as I've been doing improv, if not longer. One of my absolute favorite artists from my childhood still up to today, like, if Choking on the Truth or, Spaceman comes on, I'm jamming.
Yeah, see, that's not the kind of music that I listen to, but I did a deep dive into her work on they've got those curated playlists of her work on Apple, and in preparing for the interview. And I have to say, I guess I understood why people like her so much.
Oh, yeah, well, and even I found like such a realness and sincerity from her, from her interviews. Like, this was still in the days that like Much Music was a much bigger thing in terms of like interviews and artists.
Sure, yeah.
And even like in her, like jewel cases, like in the CDs and stuff like that that you would buy, there would be these wonderful little doodles that she had drawn and little positive affirmations that she had written in. So again, it was a really connective kind of experience with that artist.
Yeah. As I said, I enjoyed talking to her a great deal, and her book is a wonderful read as well. In terms of being a creative, as you have been, I mean, you talk about working as a chef, and, you know, I saw your LinkedIn, and you know, you've worked at various places throughout the city, you know, in restaurants and bars and the sort. How have you found it to be as creative as you are and to survive in this city? I mean, it must be hard.
I do agree. pardon me. And that, I think, is something that is echoed through a lot of people, maybe not even necessarily as just a creative.
Sure, yeah.
Vancouver is, you know, a little bit of an expensive place. One of the things that I do find, again, kind of being a creative, an artist, an improviser, is that it is maybe arguably a little bit easier to stay positive, even when, you know, prices are going up or work is a little bit more sparse. That is also one of those things. When you look at my LinkedIn, it's not all artistic things. You know, there are certain jobs that I did or had to do, you know, in order to pay bills. And so I would make sure that I could balance something that was making me busy during the day that gave me evenings or weekends off, so that I would still be able to perform and I'd still be able to be part of that artistic community.
It is a tough city to live in, isn't it? But it's encouraging to know that there are people like you who manage to make it work, I guess, and make our community a lot richer with the work that you're doing at the Improv Center.
Thank you. I'm
sure there are a lot of people who can't wait for the heat listening to us, and we urge them to go down to the Improv Center the 27th to the 31st of January. I so appreciate your time today. Thanks for this. It's been such a pleasure talking to you.
Well, thank you so much. Anytime you need an interview, you give me a call.
Will do. The website for more is theimprovcenter.ca. The Heat, an international improv comedy showcase, begins tomorrow night, Tuesday the 27th of January, and runs through to the 31st. Alan Pavlikovic, the artistic director of the Improv Center, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.